Welcome to Spectrum West, everyone. I'm Al Ross. Today, from Denmark, Christian Buga. A couple close buddies coming across the Atlantic and then west to Barron, Wisconsin, just to entertain those of us smart enough or fortunate enough to take advantage of their presence. We'll enjoy a conversation with Christian from his home in Copenhagen, and we'll get a taste of their wonderful sound. Jim Oliver's here with a young director, Peyton Anderson. Season play put on by young people, the Youth Theater of Theater in the Woods in Shell Lake. Jim will also run down some of what else is on stage in western Wisconsin. We'll hear about the Valley Art Association and a visit with Chris Crow, who presides over the board meetings and is a working artist herself. The association has a couple exciting things to do this month. We'll provide a few Spectrum memos heralding other events fitting into the broad arts and culture segment of life in West Wisconsin. And here's where we commence the first June 2016 episode. Just as in the artistic process, where you seldom know what you're going to end up with, it's the same with scheduling conversations with the artists. I have the distinct pleasure of sharing dialogue with artists of every discipline, medium, and creative stripe. Often I've seen their art, but have not made their acquaintance. I frequently wonder if the person I meet will resemble the personality of the art I've observed. Erica Mock is a textile artist whose work is colorful, spirited, serendipitous, outgoing, and approachable. Turns out, the artist, one of many featured in this weekend's Fresh Art Tour, appears to be all of that and more. I was interested to see that your bio says you were born in Switzerland. Were you there long enough to remember it? Did you leave as a child, or how did that all work?
I did leave as a child. My family immigrated to Wisconsin, but I do remember it. What I remember are snippets of childhood that actually, as I look back on it, ended up influencing my art life. So I did go to kindergarten in Switzerland. I walked to school, so every day was an adventure. And one of the foremost things that we did in my kindergarten class was we built a replica of the town that I was born in,
wow,
which was an amazing way to sort of give you this overview of what home and where you belonged, where you lived, as a really young child. It was a pretty remarkable thing.
When someone thinks of Switzerland, of course, we always think of a mountainous region. So the moment you said I walked to school, I'm picturing you going, you know, along cliffs and stuff. But it's probably not the case, right?
Not quite the case, no. But the road was very curvy and fairly hilly. There are places in Wisconsin, in fact, where the studio tour is, those sort of curvy, beautiful roads that you travel on through western Wisconsin. There is a similarity to where I was born, only that in the distance you could see the mountains.
Previously, you said that you believe the brief experience that you had in Switzerland affected your artistic propensity. Do you think that possibly the heritage or that experience injected some artistic juice in your system? Do you feel as if you draw on that fact of where you came from in your work even today?
That's an interesting question, because I feel like I do draw on it, and it isn't always conscious. I learned that I have family members who work in the textile trade. Switzerland tapestry textiles, certain techniques, are very, very revered. Some of my relatives work in St. Gallen, which is a town that is very close to where I was born, and they're very high up in the textile industry there. So in that regard, you know, I didn't know about that influence. I think mostly the biggest influence for me that Switzerland has is the beauty. Wherever I've gone in my life, I have really had this need, this really deep desire to create beauty. And I do believe that stems from my childhood and the surroundings that I was in.
Your art background, the beginning, what happened after that? I mean, you guys left, you moved to Wisconsin. Was art always part of what you did? Did you live in an artistic family? When did you realize art was going to be something that was important and that you were going to travel arm in arm in life? How did that all work?
I think textiles are in my bones. So I started as a knitter. At the ripe age of 4, I followed my mother around so that she would teach me to knit. She wouldn't teach me before I was 4 years old. That's where, you know, it sort of all began, and I spent a good portion of my childhood working with certain textiles. And what happens in certain European countries is that the sort of living arts, like textiles, are considered that. They are a part of every day. You're practicing a little bit every day. My mother's side of the family was very creative. There would be different projects that she would have for us as kids. And so I had a very rich sort of art life at home, but also a lot of, you know, farm life, because that's what I grew up on, was a farm. So that was intertwined in sort of that creative life.
You know, one of the things that I love asking visual artists is how they know when a piece of their work is finished. My curiosity is even more intense when I ask you that question, because if one goes to your website and looks at the beautiful things that you produce, one notices these are very busy pieces. There are wonderful accoutrements all over, and they're creative as heck. But I say to myself, all right, she puts that there and that up there and this down there. You stand back and you say, okay, that's finished. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's not. How do you know?
That's a great question. Oh, my gosh. I work so intuitively that sometimes it feels like as I create, okay, the pieces that I'm going to be showing at the art tour this coming weekend are pieces that are made very, very intuitively. I start with a fabric, and this might sound a little bit crazy, but I let the fabric talk to me. As I'm holding it, I'm working with the sort of innate qualities in the fabric, the drape, the texture, the color. And as I do the holding and the physical part of it, in my mind, I get this image of what I want to do with it. So I just begin. I start cutting. I lay out. I just go.
Do you work with all different kinds of fabric, all thicknesses and all the fabric we know of?
I do. I don't go super thick. You know, how pieces fit on the human body, what we want to wear. Most of my pieces are accessory pieces.
Okay.
So they will go over something else. I do have a line of sweaters, and I actually will have one sweater because, as you said, they are very detailed, and sweaters are done completely differently than the sort of organic accessory pieces out of recycled fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
The sweaters, I draw them first. Then after I draw them, I create what's called a schematic, which is the pattern that I then create the sweater from. It changes a bit as I go because there's always that. I don't want to be too stiff with anything. There's always that option to change something near the end if I feel it. I do try things on at times to see, okay, what's happening here. But often I work in series, so I'll have often 10 pieces going at one time.
Ah.
Sometimes I'm dodging back and forth between them to see which element that worked in one might work in another one because I loved it or because something happened that it just sang out. Yeah, I have a music background. In my previous career, I was a music therapist, so I often think that when I'm working with my fabric pieces that I'm composing.
Sure. That makes sense. And the reason I asked about all the different kinds of fabrics, when you said that the fabric talks to me, I was trying to imagine, you know, some thick wool might have a, hey, Erica, how you doing today?
Here's another fairly esoteric thing, but I think it's kind of relevant to our time and, you know, creating sustainability. When I'm recycling fabrics, I'm interested in the invisible stories that are in them. Because, you know, people have worn these pieces and had experiences and created memories and then loved the pieces enough or were conscious enough of something to give them to be recycled.
Yeah.
And then I find them, and they talk to me, they sing to me. They sing to me when they're finished. I think they do.
Well, good. One of the wonderful things I ran into at an art show not long ago, and I ended up buying a couple purses for my two grown daughters. She made purses out of recycled clothing.
Yeah.
And the neat thing was is that on the label of the purse, she would have a photograph of the clothing that she tore apart to make the purse.
And it was, oh, that's fabulous.
It was very cool. Yeah, you'd see a jacket. She would incorporate, for instance, on the side of a purse, maybe one of the pockets from that panel of the jacket. You know, she'd do jeans and shirts and sweaters, and it was, she'd always take a photograph first before she tore it all up.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I don't do that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, she lives far away, so you can steal it if you want.
Okay, I'll remember that.
We're on the telephone enjoying a conversation with Erica Mock. She's an artist, and part of the reason we're talking to her is this is the weekend of the 17th Fresh Art Tour. It's June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and it's among the strikingly beautiful areas of Pepin and Pierce counties here in western Wisconsin. I did notice, Erica, when I was doing some research and preparing for our conversation, how interesting it is that the word mock means imitation or artificial or fake, and your work is completely the opposite.
Oh, that is so kind of you to say. Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome.
I think about the mockingbird when I think about imitation. And maybe subliminally, unconsciously, or maybe quite consciously, I'm working to change the meaning of my name.
Sure.
I don't know.
As one looks at what you produce, do you watch or do you care about fashion trends, or is it your job to just buck them and start your own?
I pay attention to them usually after I already have a really firm idea, because I don't want the influence of the fashion world to influence what I do. I am much more interested in creating a wearable piece that in some way might connect to our essence in a way that will make us more essentially ourselves. Like, I ask that question sometimes. Is there a garment that can connect to our essence? Is there something that can help us feel more essentially ourselves? Because clothing is like our second skin and our body shelter. So how does it nourish and sustain us, but also help us express ourselves? I mean, this might sound a little complicated, but my interior workings are probably as complex looking in my brain as the work that you see on my website, in that I want to try and simplify this a little bit. I'm working at that place where we as humans link with the natural world, with the planet that we live on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a sort of place between art, science, and spirit, creating that garment that can connect to either a story, to a decision that we're going to make, a choice that we have, something that's sort of in the mix of everything that I'm doing, too.
Mm-hmm. You just used the word garment. Does that mean that everything that you make is designed to wear, or do you make textile art that's meant to just hang on a wall?
I do pieces that are both. Often the pieces, especially the recycled pieces, and many of them that I'll be showing this weekend, are meant to be transformational, so they can be worn, they can hang on a wall. I have a few collectors that talk about putting their pieces out in their home. And so when they look at them, they go, oh, okay, I can grab this when I'm going out. So it's that piece of, textile, that sort of comfort that it can also give.
I hope to get good enough at recognizing your stuff that I will be at a function someday and say, oh, you're wearing a mock.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I have to tell you that I am working on a men's line.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm not a young guy, but I'm willing to try anything.
I'm not young either.
When it comes to menswear, though, you should probably meet the person you're going to make it for. I would think custom work would be good for guys.
Yeah. And that's, as I'm designing it, that's exactly how it is going. I have an artist in Waterloo, Iowa. He is an abstract painter, and so it's very cool for me to be able to use him and his work as sort of my inspiration.
Good.
For the men's line. And I ask men who comment to me about my work what they would like to see. You know, what are the elements that they would love to see?
Some things that I jotted down that I read about you. Fiber is an element, a connecting element. I like the fact that you have a thing called the Gratitude Series. I put that down. I also like, and I think we can leave people with this because it'll give their imaginations something to chew on. You like to say that thread is my paintbrush. That's a wonderful way of putting what you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Erica Mock is an artist in the truest sense of the word. She is a part of the 17th Fresh Art Tour. It includes 16 studios and galleries throughout the villages and countrysides of Pepin and Pierce counties. It's this weekend. Which place are you going to be at?
I am at the Day Dunlap Studio, which is site number 2. And, oh, my gosh, that is a fabulous location. So beautiful. Their studio is separate from their home. The gardens are gorgeous. And then Linda's and Bruce's art. You will chuckle and laugh.
Okay. Thank you. See you later.
You're welcome. See
Bye.
You, Al.
Erica Mock, textile artist and effective ambassador for the impressive 17th Fresh Art Tour that weaves through Pierce and Pepin counties from Durand on the northeast, Pepin to the south, this Friday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. The website is freshart.org. You'll find work, bios, map. All you need to do is start the car, head in that direction, and signs are going to point the way. By the way, Erica has a website. It's Erica Mock. That's E-R-I-K-A, Erica Mock, M-O-C-K, .com. This is Spectrum West. Hi there. Thanks for being with us. Support for WPR comes from Menominee Street Dental of Eau Claire, with information online at msdsmile.com. New patients are welcome. At Menominee Street Dental, the most important smile to us is yours. Support also comes from Luther College, a liberal arts college that emphasizes learning in community to instill research, writing, and critical thinking skills, and an environmental and service ethos. Visit information at luther.edu. Well, in addition to previewing and reporting on books of Western Wisconsin interest and by Wisconsin authors, Jim Oliver covers the West Wisconsin theatrical beat, which can be very prolific. He talks with executive directors of theater companies, actors, and he very much enjoys talking with producer directors. He's conversed with the most seasoned and every now and then discovers those paying early theater dues.
The summer youth program at the Theater in the Woods of Shell Lake kicks off next week as rehearsals begin for a production of Aladdin. Performances will run June 17th to the 19th. Joining us by telephone to talk about the summer theater program is Peyton Anderson, director of Aladdin and a participant in the summer youth program for the past 6 years. She's now in her seventh year. Well, what got you interested in the summer youth program?
When I was in the third or second grade, I saw the ad for it in over the school announcements and around the school, and I thought, hey, maybe I should try this. I've done prairie fire before. Maybe this will be just as fun. So I went down to the theater, and I auditioned, and I got in, and I was super excited because that's my first time actually getting into a play at the theater. And then I auditioned the year after and the year after again. And then I started getting really involved in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Now, how often are the plays produced?
It depends. This year, we couldn't have nearly as many plays as we would have wanted. It just depends on how many directors.
Ah. So since you are the director, I'm gathering that your being a director enabled the company to run an extra play this summer. Does that sound reasonable?
Or? Yes.
Okay. What are the ages of the participants?
The youngest participant, I think, is 9 or 10 years old, and the oldest is 19.
Hmm. Now, I assume that you have some mentors who kind of oversee the whole operation. Is that the case? And how many are there, and who might they be?
I have two people who have helped me and given me some advice. They've done a little bit on the sides, but they're both pretty busy, so they've done what they can for me. And their names are Lori Bacham and Lane Hansen.
So they basically just oversee what you're doing, and you're on your own other than that?
I have someone who's helping me direct just to keep all the kids under control, and her name is Terry Hines.
Uh-huh. Well, talk about the process of producing a youth play, starting from when you call for auditions to pretty soon when you're going to start rehearsals.
We start by choosing the play, and then we order scripts and we set a date for auditions. Mm-hmm. Once we get all the auditions done, we cast, and that's one of the hardest parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we set rehearsal dates and a read-through date. And then once we start practices, we start going on how to say your lines, when to say them. Of course, they have the scripts, so they know when to say them. And how to move, how we want you to look on stage and costumes and lighting and tech.
Going back a little bit, what's the process of selecting the play?
It depends for every director. Some directors decide, I want to be a director, but I don't know which play I want to direct. So they'll search the internet until they find a play that they like. I did that at first, but then I decided this cast is for a teenage play, but I don't think we're going to get enough teenagers. So I decided to switch from my original play that I wanted to do to Aladdin.
Well, talk a little bit about Aladdin, the version that you're producing. You said you switched from one to another. What are the differences?
The differences were actually a lot. The first one I did was going to be a murder mystery play, and then I decided if I want kids to be involved with this too, it probably shouldn't be this murder play. So I decided to look through the plays and scripts we had at the theater, mm-hmm. and the one I liked best was Aladdin.
Huh. Now, there are a number of different versions of Aladdin. What is this based on? Is this based on a movie or the fairy tale or what?
This is based on the direct story of Arabian Nights, mm-hmm. which Aladdin originally came from.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different from the Disney movie, however, because one, it's not a musical. A lot of the characters don't have the same name, and there are characters that aren't in the movie that are in this production.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume that you have people building sets and helping with other things in the production of the play. Is this done by the youth, or are there adults involved in that?
Well, me and Carrie did the set and the costumes already because we just wanted to get them done as soon as possible. So we had her son, North, help, and he's in the play as well. And for our tech crew, we have Layla and her daughter, Odessa, setting everything up for us. And then during the performances, we have two high schoolers working the board.
Hmm. Now, how many are in the cast?
We have 18 in the cast.
18?
18.
That's quite a crowd to try and keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, are you having a good time doing this so far?
It's been very fun. I've only gotten to be with the kids a couple days, but they seem pretty amazing, and my co-director is awesome.
Hmm.
And I know a lot of the kids in the play I've done either previous plays with, or I've seen them around my school, and they're all really good people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking to Peyton Anderson, who is director of Aladdin, the summer youth program production of the Theater in the Woods of Shell Lake. The play runs from June the 17th to the 19th at the Eric Aquam Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. For ticket information, you can use your favorite internet search engine to find Theater in the Woods, Shell Lake. Peyton, thanks so much for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Jim Oliver. We'll be back in just a bit with more on what West Wisconsin stages are presenting in the near future. This is Spectrum West. Here's a Spectrum memo. Lynn Gray Drawings and Wayne Potraz Sculptures come to the Red Horse Gallery in Fountain City, Wisconsin in June. There's an opening reception Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. The website is red-horse-gallery.com. Well, the Valley Art Association's proven its worth to artistic members, donors, and venues over its 10-year history, and June of 2016 is an active month for the group. Not only are they officially opening their storefront gallery in Chippewa Falls, they're also presenting the 9th Fine Art Fair. This year, an exhibit at the historic Heide Center for the Arts. Chris Crow is Valley Art Association president and a working artist as well, recounting the history of the art fair.
They started out at the mansion, Rutledge Mansion in Chippewa Falls, but it was all an outdoor venue, and parking was difficult. The outdoor weather thing was hard, and so then that's when we moved to Springfest, but then that was difficult because it was early in the year and it was very cold. I guess we kind of were talking, we said, well, maybe the Heide, being that it's an art venue. Then we met with the downtown people, and they said, yeah, we could put something together with Chippewa downtown, and that's where we came up with Paint the Town Up and Down, and so that's part of our whole thing.
So are you a charter member?
I am not a charter member, no. And a couple of years ago, someone asked me if I would consider joining, so I ended up being the president. So.
Well, as the president now, though, you must know a bit of the history. It probably started out fairly meagerly.
There was also an Eau Claire Arts League, I think. When Eau Claire shut down, I think we took in some of those other members. So we have about 80 members right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty busy, and we try to offer a lot of opportunities for our members, and one of them is this art fair. But we also do a fall show at the Heide, and we have hanging opportunities for all of our members at Lucy's and From the Vine, and now it's going to be at Previa Health.
Neat.
And then we try to keep them updated on all the current activities going around the art world, you know, whether they're showing at Janet Carson Gallery or the L.A. Phillips or wherever. And then just recently, we started the Valley Art Gallery, which is all members.
One thing that people should know, the Valley Art Association is a bona fide nonprofit organization, so it's one of those things to which we can all donate.
Yes, it is. We have artists who are active artists, and we also have people who just support the arts. And we have quite a few members who will just donate and don't take advantage of some of our art opportunities, and we appreciate that. You can be a member. I mean, it's relatively inexpensive. It's $25 for the year. And, of course, then we have, you know, sponsor levels of $100 or $200 or whatever you want to do, really.
So benefits of membership? I know you have a newsletter, networking. You have workshops you put on?
Yep, we put on workshops. We do a lot of networking. We try to let people know what's going on at any of the local art venues, from the Janet Carson Gallery to L.A. Phillips or anything like that. There's a new Seahorse Inn is going to be hanging things. And then we also are always looking for opportunities for our members to hang exclusively at some places. And then part of being well-known, I guess, for the VAA is that we had an opportunity in December when a businessman did not have an occupant for his business and asked the Valley Art Association if they would like to open up a holiday store. Which we did. And then we just were having so much fun, and it was all set up, so we decided we would hang in there through the lean months during the summer. We are going to have a grand opening June 18th, so we're excited about that, and we'll be part of the activities downtown for the Paint the Town Up and Down during the art fair, too.
So that people who know downtown Chippewa Falls can pinpoint it, where is it?
It is in a fantastic location. It's right on Bridge Street, 304 West Bridge Street, and it's right across from Mason Shoes, next to the Tomahawk Room, I suppose, too.
Now, see, a lot of people will know that.
Yeah.
Now. We're in the studio with Chris Crow. She is board president of the Valley Art Association. We're talking about a couple aspects of the VAA, and that is their local store or their local gallery, and the 9th Fine Arts Fair, which is coming up the 9th through the 11th of June at the Heide Center. So let's talk about you, I mean, as an artist, because that's the privilege you get, being in the hot seat when you come in to do an interview. You're one of those people who, I don't know your history, I know you're a good artist now, because you were a busy person. Did you dabble in art at one time? And then you just, when you decided to hang up the full-time job, you said, I'm going to do more art?
I've always appreciated art. I've always enjoyed it.
Let's tell people what you did as a vocation.
I was a high school English teacher.
Okay, there we go.
And so I really didn't do much as far as art. I do remember that I could always draw fairly well, but my son is now a graphic designer. When he was younger, was very into detail, and he would ask me to draw things that he couldn't, and it was a lot of pressure on me to do it just right. So I don't know if that helped or not, but after I retired, then I happened to be downtown in Augusta during our Bean and Bacon Day thing, and they have a group of ladies get together and do watercolor. So I stopped in, and they started showing me how to do that a little bit. And then they said, join Beaver Creek Reserve. And that was an amazing group of people who have helped me. And, of course, then I've started taking workshops, and I've gone on painting trips out of the country. And I was listening to public radio one day, and some woman who carves gourds, gourd lady from Madison,
yeah. mm-hmm.
the gourd girl,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So we invited her up, and I had about 6, 7, 8 of my friends, and she showed us how to carve gourds.
Wow, see.
So I got interested in carving gourds, and I guess that's the thing I really enjoy, but I like painting and the whole works, I guess.
That's the networking part of the benefits of being in an art group. You may not have known it back then, but it's obvious that your son got the gene from you, because that came first.
Yeah,
so he should thank you for that. So, you know, artists are often loners. A lot of times it's the solitude that inspires them. Mm. What's good about being a member of an artist group? What's it done for somebody like you?
You know, I think that art is not a solitary pursuit. I just did something recently. Someone was asking you how you unleash your inner artist, and I think it's through collaboration. And I think part of it is belonging to an organization like this, having the opportunity then to bring in different people and try different things. Every art form you do really impacts or influences the next one. It always enhances it. I think when you get together with a group of people, you're likely to share ideas or get ideas how you might want to do things. And then there's also that critical aspect. They know they can look at it and say, you know, I think you ought to be trying this, or maybe you should try more of this, or, you know, a lot of kudos for how it's turning out. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, working with people.
Well, since you contend that it's good to be in a group of people, let me ask you this. Do you find there's a difference in your art, the art that you work on when you're with a bunch of people, as opposed to the ones you're working on by yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I go, and in fact, I'm on my way up to Pat Ham's.
I was going to bring that up, because that's a favorite hangout for some of you guys.
Yeah. And so we have about, you know, I don't know, 6 to 8 people in there.
That's in Chautauqua.
Yeah, in our gallery. And I know a lot of other people go to studios and paint.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you're all there and you're talking, you are more likely to try different things and maybe stretch yourself a mm-hmm. little bit more. And
then you can't wait to get home and keep doing it.
Yeah. And so when you're at home, sometimes you can put on the final touches or mm-hmm. or maybe you look at it and say, well, this is, you know, fine the way it is. But it is certainly a lot more fun to be with other people.
Certainly. But you paint at home.
I do.
Do you have your own little place?
I have a little upstairs studio. I would like a really built outside with sun coming in windows.
Lots of skylights.
And then I work in the summer on our deck.
Good. All right, let's get to the particulars. Let's let people know all about what's going on. First of all, the Fine Art Fair is June 9th through 11th. When's the Heidi open? And blah, blah,
okay,
blah.
So it's up at the Heidi. We're going to have 35 artists, probably about 35 different types of art.
This is the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen.
So it'll start Thursday, June 9th. We're open from 3 to 7. Friday, the next day, they're open from 4 to 7. June 10th, and on Saturday, they'll be there all day from 10 to 5.
And this isn't just an exhibit, it's also a sale, right?
It is definitely a sale. People are bringing their works. Horse-drawn rides up to the Heidi. We're hoping that people will then come back and purchase some things that they may see that they like.
And the Valley Art Association has the Valley Art Gallery storefront downtown Chippewa Falls. Again, the grand opening is June 18th. That's from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if you still, after all of Chris and my yakking here, have questions, the website is valleyartassociation.org. Chris Crow, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
The Valley Art Association, for artists and the enjoyment of visual art. This is Spectrum West. We appreciate your participation with us today. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Western Wisconsin Farm Fresh Atlas, the local magazine for finding and supporting local farms in this part of the state. On shelves now. More information at WWFFA.net. There's a Spectrum memo. Tuesday Night Blues returns to Owen Park in Eau Claire for its 8th season. It's underway now. Coming up next Tuesday, the 7th, it's the Tommy Bentz Band. Music begins at 6:30. Food, refreshments, vendors. And the website is ChippewaValleyBlues.com. Well, summer in the world of theater is either hot or not. Jim Oliver finds the competition for your attention slim at the moment. That's a good thing for those in production. So here's Jim with what's on stage in Western Wisconsin.
Thanks, Al. The Spitfire Grill will run through June 11th at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present South Pacific in concert Saturday and Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. An original adaptation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs will be staged for school groups through Friday at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Auditions for The Wizard of Oz have been scheduled for the Eau Claire Children's Theater Sunday and Monday at the Oxford Theater. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Mark Peterson is an organizer and promoter of appearances that prove how fun it is and how rewarding to welcome musicians from across the ocean to Western Wisconsin. It's a reminder how much we all have in common and how well music serves as an instrument of international diplomacy. Another concert is right around the corner up in Barron, so we called Denmark, yes, the country Denmark, one recent morning, which translates into late afternoon, where Christian Buga answered the phone. I have to marvel how far Denmark has come. Now, its first reputation was not very pleasant. It was where Danish Vikings, and some of those guys were some pretty mean people. They rolled through Europe having their way with everybody. And today, when we hear the word Danish, we think of a donut, a sweet roll. It makes us forget the bad Vikings. The Danes, however, also great musicians. And today it's Christian Buga, a fiddle player who is part of a trio coming to play in Wisconsin. So welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you. Yeah, my pleasure, for sure.
I went online and I started reading last week all about Denmark again. I had a conversation with a guy not long ago and we talked about how happy Scandinavians are. But we're going to get to that happiness in a minute, by the way, Christian. Carolyn Bain, a writer, she had this to say: "These days, I return with the same passions, enriched with an adult appreciation for Denmark's egalitarianism, its belief that cities belong to people, not cars, and its endless quest for hygge. It helps that everything is easy on the eye, the unfairly attractive locals, yes, but also the architecture, the landscapes, and the interior design." She says, "I think that secretly most cities want to grow up to be Copenhagen. And if they don't, they should." Cool.
That's that sounds nice.
That was my first introduction to the word hygge.
Yeah.
If you walk up to Danes on the street, they know what it is. Tell our audience what hygge is.
Yeah, we pronounce it more in the direction of hygge. Well,
hygge.
It's close. It's hygge, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's about, being cozy and relaxed together in your spare time. And you know, it's about lighting an extra candle and maybe putting on some nice music, maybe having some flowers on the table, those little things, you know, the cozy thing, or maybe having a blanket and sitting in front of the fireplace and singing with the guitar and all that kind of stuff is what we describe with the word hygge.
I should tell people that it's spelled H-Y-G-G-E, so that's where it's tough to learn the pronunciation. And if you don't do the very often, it's tough to do that as well. So hygge.
I'm sorry about that, yeah.
Do you guys actually use that word in daily language? Do you say, you know, I'm going to go home and get some hygge, or do you say this is hygge-like, or how do you use it?
No, we use the word. We don't say that I'm going to go home for some hygge, but we would use it in the sense of saying, oh, it was really hyggeligt yesterday. it was so hyggeligt. I met your sister over at this and that place, or oh, it's been a hyggelig weekend, or something like that.
I'm trying to think of what American word might be like that, and I don't know that we have one. The definition that I found: a feeling or a mood that comes from taking genuine pleasure in making ordinary, everyday things more meaningful, beautiful, or special.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Here's a last sentence. While there's no one English word to describe hygge, several can be used interchangeably to describe the idea, such as coziness, charm, happiness, security, familiarity, comfort, reassurance, kinship, and simpleness. So there you go.
Yeah.
I know I'm harping on the word. It's like everyday stuff for you, so you're probably kind of bored with my whole focus on this word.
No, I'm surprised that you picked that out, but it's nice. I think it's a great topic.
It's almost as if it's like one word that describes why it is you Scandinavians are so happy.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It's interesting to me, too, Christian, that hygge and bugge are fairly similar. There must be a relationship there.
Wow, I've never seen that relationship before, but that, yeah.
It's G-G-E at the end.
I'll use that one in the future.
If we can spread that kind of feeling and inspiration among American audiences, they may decide to adopt hygge in their own way, and maybe we'll come up with our own word.
Yeah.
We'll try to have more hyggely weekends. We have to learn how to pronounce it better, though.
It sounds good already, your pronunciation, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it was a tight polishing that was needed, that's all.
Now, what I've noticed about Scandinavian musicians is they're not, here comes a big word, homogeneous. They don't stay in one place or hang out with just one group. You guys like to collaborate and make as much music as you can, and that might explain why you're so good. Now you're coming with two other guys who are consummate musicians. I know that because I've listened to your music. So tell me about how you guys collaborate and how much you... Is it because you meet each other so often and you say we should play together, or how does that work?
Yes. Well, it's all kind of looking like a line of coincidence, but... You know, Sonic, who plays the accordion and harmonica in this new trio, him and I have been meeting many, many times at festivals and often been ending up in jam sessions together. And sometimes we've been the last ones left still playing. And it's been a lot of fun always. Guitarist and I, we've also met at some festivals, but more in the organizer's role somehow, and we've been becoming friends. And then actually sometimes he plays also with Mette Katrine and me, that accordion lady. We've been playing as a duo for 15 years now, and that's the duo that visited Wisconsin earlier. So sometimes that duo is also playing as a trio with Morten, the guitarist. But then we decided to invite Morten to play when Sonic and I were starting a trio. It's a lot of the same musicians in many different combinations. That's how it works a lot in Denmark. The scene is not so big, and some of the good guys, you meet them many places. In the end, we finally decided that this is so fun that we have to take it on stage and tour with this.
You were mentioning first name Sonic. How is Sonic's last name pronounced? Lydum?
Yeah, and in Danish we say Lydum again.
Lydum, okay.
Lydum, Sonic Lydum.
Okay. Morten's last name has a little slash through the O, so I think there's probably going to be a pronunciation faux pas for me on that one, too.
He's called Morten Alfred Højrup.
Højrup, okay.
Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah, Højrup.
Sonic is spelled S-O-N-N-I-C-H. Sonic is kind of a cool word. I mean, sonic means sound, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Is there something called Sonic Boom
yes.
in English?
He could have a group.
Yeah, that's
he...
exactly like him.
He's got a boom, does he?
Yeah.
We're talking to Christian Buga, and he is sitting where? Where are you in Denmark right now?
I'm in central Copenhagen right now.
Christian is coming with Sonic and Morten. Christian, by the way, plays the fiddle, and he plays it extremely well. Sonic is an accordionist, plays the harmonica and sings, and Morten Høyrup, trying that.
Yeah,
he's a guitarist, and he also sings. Do you sing too, Christian?
Only a little bit. No, I try to keep it low because I think it's the best that way for the audience. You know, sometimes I get excited and sing along, as people used to do in the parties, and, you know, you just sing along, like, along with the fiddle tunes. I don't know if you call it howling or something like that in English.
Sure, sure.
I like that. You know, but that's basically the only style of singing I do. Yeah, mainly Morten sings the real songs.
When I talk to guys of your ilk, we bring up the kinds of music that you play, and I think it's wonderful. I've been blessed to be able to go to a few of those shows. So much of the music that you play sounds like it's deeply embedded in your heritage. When you write music, does it need to sound Danish? Do you work to make it sound that way, or is that just the way it comes out? Because it is part of your heritage.
Well, that's an interesting question. I think we take a lot of inspiration from many parts of the world these days. And certainly American old-time music is also a big inspiration for us, and as well as Scottish and Irish music and our Scandinavian neighbors, too. But I don't know if in the tunes that we write ourselves, if you can still maybe hear something Danish. That's a question hard to answer, you know, in a straight and simple way. I think we judge it if it's something that we like and if it's something catchy. And I guess we don't want to just make it sound completely Irish or completely old-time American or completely Swedish or something. But, yeah, I don't know. It just comes out. It's almost like the tunes want to be in some way, I think.
Yeah, a lot of times music plays itself, as they say.
Yeah, that's right.
First of all, do you play all new music? Do you play all original stuff, or do you play some of the old standards that you guys grew up with?
Yeah, with this trio and with most of my bands, actually, we play mainly old tunes that we find in old manuscript books or in old field recordings or some tunes also that we learn from older players. And that's what really inspires me, because a lot of those melodies are so great, you know, they've been handed down maybe a couple of centuries or more, and it seems like that is a good, what's it called, distillery way for the music. I believe that a lot of the boring tunes that were written 300 years ago, they've been forgotten, but the great tunes, they survive, and that's how you can find so many amazing tunes in the traditional material. That's why we play a lot of that music. And then we try to compose new tunes also to spice it up. But it's really hard to compete with those old tunes, I think.
On the phone with Christian Buga. He is a fiddle player and lives in Denmark. But he's going to hop on a plane fairly soon, coming with two friends, Sonic and Morten, and they're playing at the Barron Area Community Center on Wednesday, June 8th. It begins at 7:30 p.m. We'll have all the information for you coming up later on. You were talking about the fact that you many times were the last people playing at some function. Can you tell then at that point there's some magic going on? Do you have kind of a brotherhood that's formed through your music?
Yeah, after you find out that you can really play well together, you also instantly become good friends. You know, those two things follow each other, I think. And that's also one of the amazing things, how music can really build bridges, also sometimes with people from another generation than your own, or with even people from different cultures. And if you can play with them, you know, and you make music together, then you're already friends, you know.
Yes, on my notes right in front of me it says, if we all simply played music together, we would have no wars.
Yeah, something like that. I agree completely.
What do you like to listen to?
Well, I like to listen to a lot of old rock and roll from the 60s. I like Led Zeppelin and classic stuff like that. But I also like heavy metal, and I also like some jazz music as well. In Copenhagen, the music scene is really rich and very varied, so I try to go out and listen to new stuff. I've just been playing with a trumpet player this weekend, and he is into some kind of free jazz. So actually, I'm going to probably go listen to his concert tonight, quintet playing some free jazz, and I don't know what it's going to be like, but I got curious.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and I wish you safe travels. Have a wonderful time while you're in Wisconsin. I know Mark Peterson treats his guests very well, and I know the crowds love you.
Yes.
Thanks again for talking with us, and all the best in everything you do.
Thank you, Al. Thanks for your interest and for having me on. It was a pleasure, for sure.
Momentarily, I'll be sending along information about how to get tickets, so have a pencil ready or open that electronic notepad. That's Christian, Sonic, and Morten, a dynamic trio of Danish musicians, next Wednesday, June 8th, 7:30 p.m. at the Barron Area Community Center. That's on Memorial Drive in Barron. Tickets will be available at the door, and ticket information is available on the website thebacc.com or by phone at 715-537 and then four sixes. 715-537-6666. Thanks and welcome to Emily Colosimo, summer publicity specialist, to Mrs. Brown, of course, and Special K, the rapper in charge here at WPR. More music next week as the Lucky Losers come east from the Bay Area of California to entertain at Owen Park in Eau Claire at Tuesday Night Blues. And of course, we're working on more conversations, so keep your ears on WPR and have them here a week from today when we'll do Spectrum West again. I'm Al Ross. I appreciate it that you're here. See ya.